I want to begin with that sense of love and appreciation. I will say that unlike the State of the Union, you can hold all applause to the end, okay? Don't need to interrupt today. But we do start with love and appreciation. And I think just the spirit that we sensed in the room, you could hear the buzz around tables. You probably sensed that when you started, there was a certain pace. And by the end, you were stringing things together very quickly, round and round the table. And as we think about who we are and who we will be, that's really where we start, with the things that we appreciate and love, with the places where we see God already at work, where we sense that God is seeking to bring up a new thing, where we sense things are emerging in the life of our church together at First Baptist. And I hope I was clear to you a year ago that it was not my understanding that my job was to bring or import any kind of model or experience from outside onto this good church, but rather to listen and to learn about what we love and appreciate about ourselves, where God is already at work, the best parts of our tradition, and to use those things in moving forward in the hopeful future together. And that came up in my first sermon here. It was a trial sermon. Some of you were here. It was a sermon about windows. Many of you will remember that I shared a story then that's told by Theodore Wardlaw, who's president of Austin Seminary, and he tells the story about an old Presbyterian church in Dallas that had a worn-out building, and they built this new multi-million dollar sanctuary, and it was all modern and open and airy, this wonderful new building campaign, but they made a point to preserve an aspect of their original building, and that was the church's windows. They had these stunning Tiffany stained glass windows that were relics of the church's heritage, that were symbols of all that was already loved and appreciated about this good church. And they, as they were building the sanctuary, thought about these relics and how they might preserve them and repurpose them in this new building that they were building into kind of a new modern vernacular. And what a symbol for us of the way that a church and our growth and new vision is always a conversation with the traditions, the relics, the material of our past. And you'll remember there was one window in particular that was a great soaring symbol for this church. It was the window that depicted Christ the Good Shepherd over the front of the stage area, arms outstretched, and the invitation, "Come unto me, all you who labor, and I will give you rest. Come unto me, all you who labor." It had been this amazing invitation to people for decades in that sanctuary. But when they built the new sanctuary, they did some serious theological thinking about that central window. And they decided that they would move it so that instead of the front, it now sits at the back. And it is the way by which people exit. And as you're walking out of that sanctuary into the world into which God calls us, there's the invitation and the outstretched arms, "Come unto me, all you who labor." Taking a central symbol of that church's life, repurposing it, and in doing so, saying a new thing about the identity of that place. And I think that's the same kind of thing we are seeking to do with our love and our appreciation, with our relics, with our materials of our past, not to sweep them to the side, and not simply, though, to do things the way they've always been done, but to think about what do these materials give us and how might we repurpose them, renew them in a vision of a hopeful future. And so I'd love to hear some of the things that came up around your tables as we thought about the things we love and appreciate about First Baptist Church. I would imagine there are some common themes, but if you feel like projecting and can shout out a phrase or a word that came up around your table, a theme perhaps that emerged, just do that where you sit. We'd love to hear some of the things that came up in the room. Caring came up. Other tables hear that? And friendliness. And Hannah? And the choir, our worship tradition. What else? And love for the pastor. Okay. All right, Jim. All right. Well done. And the staff. And variety and multiplicity, sorry. and a sense of excitement for the future. What else? And generosity and family. Oh, and our benediction and sending out. And opportunities. What else? And vision and mission. And our preschool, our care for our kids. Anything else? And our youth minister and youth ministry. And Alex? Sorry, Luke, my bad. And the food? And Billy Reeves?
That's right. You should see me fill in for Doug and Terry. Yeah.
And but the multiple talents of our staff and our congregation, I would add, Becky. And excitement about the prospects and openness. Wonderful. Well, all of those are things that I'm sure we resonate with. And this was an exercise I mentioned that our deacons went through yesterday at our deacon retreat. There was such wonderful excitement around those tables, and many of the things that you have mentioned were mentioned by our deacons as well. And so all of that is material for us. All of that tells us who we have been, and it gives us a chance to arrange that, renew that, repurpose that in our future. Let me tell you some other things that I appreciate and love as I look back on my first year here. I love the signs of health that I see in our church. Just the basic metrics of new members, of newly baptized children and youth, of increasing giving units, of a financial picture that is relatively stable when you think about the wide financial picture of churches in our country. And I love the signs of health that we can see, that we can chart. I love a church that is learning to imagine its space and use its space in new ways, and appreciate Rosemary's leadership in this and thinking about how we can be increasingly open to our community and be a church that is a platform not merely for our own programs, but has a view of church that is wider than Sunday, Wednesday, and includes things like the YMCA that uses our fields, or the BSF group that meets in here on Tuesday night, or the nonprofit consortium that uses our space for meetings with such a great parking lot, with such a wonderful space, such proximity to downtown and to the city center. We are using our space in new ways. It's a tremendous asset for us. I love our staff. I love the strength of our team, the talents that they possess, and the standards of quality and excellence to which they have held themselves and which we have held one another in the last year. There have been multiple staff developments and some shifts in the last year, but I love the work and am thankful for the work that Virginia and Shelley did in our children's ministry, as both of them have transitioned out of our staff team in this last year, and we give thanks for them in this last year. I love the work that Monica did as our interim pastoral administrator for almost 3 years, being much more than someone who was assisting the pastor, but being pastoral in her own right and using her many gifts to help us through a time of transition. I love the additions to our staff, the addition of a minister of missions in general, and the addition of Kim in particular, and the pastoral gifts that she brings and her decision to be ordained here. I love the addition of Jessica, our new pastoral administrator, who in the last month has become a wonderful partner and colleague to me, to many others on our staff. This last week of 3 funerals, Jessica was outstanding, and I love the many gifts that she has for that work. And I love the addition of Ashley as our interim children's minister, her experience and her clear gifts as a pastor to our children and to our church at large, and the gifts that she brings. So I love our staff, and I think that's incredible gift and asset and appreciation for us as we move forward. I love the growing relationships I've seen in the last year with denominational bodies. That was one thing identified in our transition documents as a growing edge for our church, is strengthening our commitments and our profile as a leading church within moderate mainline Baptist movements. And we have seen those relationships increase. In my time here, I have been invited to be on all kinds of committees and boards largely because I represent a church that people want at the table. And so next year I will be chairing the Missions Council of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, and that will begin next September. And I see that very much as a result of my pastoring a church that is significant to the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, and have seen other opportunities and other Baptist denominations come our way as we increase those relationships and our presence as a strong denominational leader. Similarly, I love the expanding relationships that I'm seeing with our seminaries throughout North Carolina. I love to see all of my, several of my former Wake professors here for my installation service last October. I've loved the invitations that have come to our church to be involved there through hosting an intern, Patrick, serving as our seminary intern this year, or serving on boards or committees, invitations that have come our way to participate in continuing ed, the conversations we've had about the emerging pastoral residency possibility and the interest seminaries have with that. And we have a chance to grow even ever more as a regional church for the strong seminaries that exist in our state, in particular Duke and Wake Forest as the leading institutions in our state, also with Campbell and Gardner-Webb being moderate Baptist institutions here in our state. I love the new emerging lay leaders that I see, the lay leaders that are joining committees for the first time, or the new deacons that have come on. We're so excited to see that others are there to receive the gifts of leadership that are being passed down from saints of our church, like those that we remember just this week. And there are others, many others, who are emerging into those key positions of leadership. And related to that, I love the growth that we have seen as a congregation with the 40 and under crowd in the last year. And as many of you know, we've begun a conversation just this month with folks in that age group about our church and its ministry with folks 40 and under. We don't want to become isolated in our or ageist in any way, but we do have a growing number of young people and young families that are finding their way to First Baptist and then finding their way back and then inviting a friend. And we have had over 30 young adults involved in this conversation about ministry with the 35 or 40 and under crowd over the next few months. And we've already begun some new programs there, including a six-week Sunday school unit being taught by members of our pastoral staff, some monthly programs on the calendar in October, November, and December, and the formation currently of a young adult leadership team. So that gives me a lot of excitement as I think about our church's future and our desire to reach a population that needs to know about this church and its many gifts. Along with those, I have had some surprises this year. I think you might be interested in some of those. I've been surprised at how much I hated having an Alan Sherrill's parking space. The reason being, I entered through this hallway and the extrovert in me just couldn't do it. And so I finally got rid of the parking spot and have been entering from all over the church, parking in different places. And I love the view that that has given me, the chance to bump into folks at the reception desk or people who are coming in and out of the church, and the full picture of the life and the scale of this church. I've also been surprised how often y'all make the comment when I invite you to my office, or when I'm meeting with someone to talk about baptism or church membership, or perhaps a funeral planning or something to that nature, how often the comment is made, I've never been in this office before. And people sort of tiptoe in like it's this sacred space. I know it has a fireplace, but it is by no means sacred. I'm literally going to put a welcome mat out so that y'all start coming to visit me more, because I want that constant conversation. Those interruptions, I thrive off them, actually. But I have been surprised how many people say, I haven't been in here since I was 8 years old and Alton McEachern was talking to me about baptism. I've been surprised by some things that I think we need to think about. I've been surprised by our Wednesday night attendance, frankly. Would love to see that grow. I was surprised when I came here by the number of children in our children's wing, as others of you have commented. And I'm glad to see a scene like we saw this morning as we invited the kids down for our time with children. And they just seem to keep coming, and we want to see more of that. We want them to keep coming, keep coming. And finally, I think the most significant surprise of my time here and it is a positive mostly, is the lack that exists in this brick church with its great heritage, the lack of an establishment, pay your dues kind of culture. I am shocked that in 1 year I have not been pulled aside by someone to say, hey, we've been meaning to tell you how we do things around here. Now, some of you may be waiting to have that conversation, and I may have just invited it. And you're welcome to come to my office and have that anytime. But I just thought that came with the territory of a historic Baptist church, of a tall steeple, quote unquote. And the lack of that kind of establishment culture has been, I think, the most overwhelming surprise of my time here. Now, I don't want to say that another surprise has been the fact that we don't talk back and forth or challenge one another more in a business meeting or a deacon's meeting. So I want to see more of that, and I hope that we're encouraging that and not acting as though decisions are made somewhere off to the side in a cigar smoke-filled room that are then reported back to this wider room. But nonetheless, even in that spirit of conversation, there's a lack of, hey, this is how we do things, or hey, you have to be here for a while before you can really make any kind of impact. And I have been so pleasantly surprised by the gift of that. And as I tell friends of mine in pastoral ministry about that asset of this church, it is a shocking thing for people to hear. And so I'm so grateful for that. I remember when a dear mentor told me, when I was 26 or 27 and I was thinking about my first church, my first pastoral opportunity and where I might want to be, a friend said to me, my friend Judy Skeen, who is sort of a sage. Judy's the kind of person that people climb mountains to talk to. You know, she's off in a cave somewhere. And she has all of this wisdom, and she said, here's what I want for you. I want you to go to a place where you can sit at the table and unpack your bags of all of the things that you bring with you, and not have people say, oh, put that back, that scares us, or put that back, that's really not welcome here, or put that back, that's not how we do things. And I have found a place like that. Now, that doesn't mean that everything I pull out of my bags or you pull out of your bags is entitled to stay on the table forever, but it means we're open to conversations. It means we're open to one another. There's a spirit of openness in this church, and that's what leads me to a few words around a theme for our year ahead and what I see as a theme for our church, and that is the theme of being an opening church or an open church. Building on what I hear again and again in this church, I think maybe more than any other word, I hear the word open. As we describe our future and describe what we love, it came up some here at the tables. It came up very much at Deacon's meeting yesterday. Our convener of that retreat, Ruth Anderson of the Servant Leadership School here in Greensboro, said, I am amazed at the palpable sense of openness and excitement I sense in this church. And so I want us in the year ahead to reflect together on what it means to be an opening church. And that's more than being a welcoming church, because welcome is a sort of passive thing. But to be an opening church means to be active about the ways that we are pursuing, chasing after God, who's always calling us forward, always calling us out towards new possibilities. In my first sermon here, that trial sermon, we used the image of windows to reflect on what it would mean for us to be an open church, to have open windows. And I mentioned to you, observed, that there are really two versions of the Spirit's coming throughout the New Testament. And the first actually occurs in the Gospel of John. And if you'll remember that scene, it starts with the description that the disciples are locked behind the doors. The doors are closed for fear. Fear of the Jews in this case, but a general sense of fear at all that they had seen. They were locked inside themselves. But contrast that with the image we see in Acts 1, in Acts 2, Luke's version of the coming of the Spirit, where people are out in the streets and the doors and the windows, I imagine them wide open to the Spirit's coming. What would it mean for us to have that kind of openness? Rather than simply welcoming, be an opening church, opening our lives, our doors, our windows to one another, opening ourselves up to Christ who visits us in new and surprising ways, opening ourselves to new ways of pursuing Christ and advocating for others and experiencing the love of God and embodying the vision of the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So what might it mean for us to be an opening church? Well, five things I want to say. The first is open to our city. John Fisher, my buddy over here, told me a few months ago when we met for coffee at the Green Bean, he said, you know, I feel like you're trying to, how did he say it? He said, I feel like our church has always kind of understood itself to be in the middle of a town, and you're reminding us that we're in the middle of a city. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, that's a helpful framework. I do think that our church could stand to become citified, however you say that. But what I mean by that is a church that recognizes again and again the influence that we have and just how many people in this community are inviting us to sit at tables where decisions are made and where policy is impacted and where people's lives are impacted. A church that thinks about the interplay between our church and what happens here in our city, that thinks about our ability to renew and reinvent ourselves and a city that is going through that same process itself. I think city churches do many of the things that we are doing and seeking to do ever more. They maximize their space. They use their imaginations. They seek justice for all people. They rely on the Spirit of God. They foster intimate connections, and they know their neighborhoods. And so a subset of this is I hope we can be open to our neighborhood. We are right here situated in Westerwood, which is itself a complex neighborhood, kind of a hodgepodge of people from a cross-section of our community, and they hear our bells, and they use our space for neighborhood association meetings. But what are the new ways that we could think of to be invitational and open to our neighborhood? It's a challenge for us in the year ahead. A second point, in addition to being open to our city, is being open to our heritage. I think this is increasingly important as we are a growing church, as we are bringing in new faces who perhaps don't come through the same doorways that some of us entered through. So open to our heritage and open also to expanding it. You'll notice that every time somebody joins our church, I say to them some version of, we are different now because you are part of us. We are more than we were before you got here. And so we want to have openness across the board to our heritage, remembering it, learning from it, and also expanding it. And to me, that means being more Baptist than we are in many ways. If you were to ask this group, what does it mean to be Baptist? I think we'd have a whole cross-section of answers. But I would love for us to focus on that more, to take time every year for a kind of Baptist Heritage Weekend where we bring in someone who can help us think about, here's what it means to be Baptist. Here's what's distinct in an increasingly post-denominational culture. Here's why it's important that you leave the Baptist in your name. Here's what you have to draw on. Here's how it can be a resource and material for you in your future. So I want us to be more Baptist, strengthening our denominational ties and focusing on that Baptist heritage. And at the same time, I want us to be more ecumenical. And I don't think ecumenism starts by stripping away our distinctives. I think it starts by knowing who we are and then bringing our full selves to wider conversations. And so I think it is very much a possibility for us to be both more Baptist in our heritage and more ecumenical in our outlook, in our partnerships, in our ability to impact this city. A third thing is I want us to be open to our story. And what I mean by that is I want us to tell great stories in this place. I want us to find better ways of telling the stories of what happens in this place. We have made significant strides towards that in the last year, and we appreciate Kelly and her leadership of our communication ministries. But how can we tell better stories, and how can we employ new strategies of communication? How can we develop our website more to provide an even more vivid front door, virtual front door to our congregation? How can we think about how video might be used in our website and our communication? How can we open ourselves to our story and tell that story even more vividly and boldly? Because it's an important story to tell. And it's a story that needs to be told strategically and as widely as possible. A fourth thing, I want us to be opening and ever more open to one another. One of the things we heard again and again around these tables was friendship and relationship. But I would love us to find ways to create more conversations like the one we just had. In a large church where we worship in a large space, how can we be increasingly intimate and find other ways of being intimate with one another, whether through worship or through fellowship? How can we be more multi-generational as we think about opening ourselves to one another? Because our church is multi-generational, but we can see that there are generations where if we're going to be truly multi-generational, we have to reach into certain generations where the numbers are lower than others, and particularly college students and our 35 and under crowd. And so their presence here doesn't mean we're becoming youth-centered. It means we're becoming actually fully multi-generational in the way that we purport to be, in the way that we seek to be. And as we're doing that, how can we find new means of community and connection so that we're not simply siloed in Sunday school classes or pews or Wednesday night tables, but we're finding ways to cross paths and build community in both traditional and non-traditional ways? And finally, related to that, I want us to be open to collaboration, to a style of leadership emerging that is not simply top-down or primarily top-down, not staff-centered, but a balance between staff leadership and lay leadership. I think this is a significant growth opportunity for our church. Even as I've benefited from a church that asks me my opinion and wants to know my vision and empowers my leadership, I want to see these conversations extend back and forth and become even more balanced between staff leadership and lay leadership as a congregation. And so these 5 points are all, to me, important themes for our church, hopefully overarching themes that connect to many of the things we've talked about and heard about here today. And I want to invite you to be part of some ongoing conversation about these. On Wednesdays in October, you are invited, in addition to some other ongoing Wednesday night access classes, you're invited to this room for what we're calling the Open Forum, Wednesday night conversations around what it means to be an opening church in the year ahead. I'll be leading those and would love for you to be a part of that. Again, Wednesdays in October, we'll continue this conversation and expand it more, because I think it is a time for openness in our church, a time to open ourselves even more to the Spirit of God. If you look across the spectrum of church life and denominational life in America today, you see a lot of people locking the doors, and you see a lot of people turning inward, rallying around and focusing on what has been and preserving that for fear of what could happen if it was lost. But I don't think this is a church that is seeking to make a fear-based decision or to develop a fear-based identity. And that, I think, is the thing I have loved most about you in the last year. Those of you who are into leadership theory know the work of Stephen Covey. And Stephen Covey talks about the 4 quadrants that take our time. It's true of individuals. It's true of institutions, too, because we can give our time to things that are urgent but not important. We can give our time to things that are important but not urgent. And then we can give our time to things that are urgent and important, or to things that aren't urgent and aren't important at all. And the one that's hardest to spend your time in, the place it's hardest to give your time, you know this, are all of those things that are important but not urgent. All of those things that are vital and yet not emergencies. Because what happens? The urgency drives our decision making. Or the fear or the nervousness is what provokes us to action and sucks up our time. But I don't sense that about our church. I think we are in such a place of health. We have financial challenges like any institution, but we also have financial health. We have growth challenges like any institution or church right now, but we also have signs of life and growth and see that swelling. And so this is not a time, in my mind, for urgent things. It's a time for important things as a congregation. It is not a time to think about survival, but it's a time to think about what it means to be thriving in these next years and phases of our life. It's not a time for a line of thinking that says we've got to do something. It's a time for thinking that says we get to do something. And it's not a time, still not a time, for locked doors. It's a time to be an open church. I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to visit our Joy Sunday School class here, a wonderful group of saints in our church, and we had some conversation together at the invitation of Noreen and Bobby. I came and we talked some about some of the initiatives our church is considering, important things that still need our conversation and our careful reflection and prayer. And we had great back and forth for the Sunday school hour. I think I more than filled my time, Bobby. But at the close of that time, as we were milling about in the Sunday school room, a member of that class came forward to me, and she described to me her excitement and her openness for the future of our church, whether it's focused on a downtown project or on the many other things that are possible for us. And she said, you know, when I came to this church, it was a place that I thought I would simply be comfortable and secure in what would probably be the last couple of decades of my life. But in the last couple of years, I have sensed such a growing energy and possibility and eagerness and openness that it has changed what I've come to expect from this church. And then she leaned forward and she kissed me on the cheek and she said in my ear, what I'll say to you now, let's go for it. And so maybe we can hear in that the Spirit of God calling us forward, and let's go for it. Let us pray. God, we do give you thanks for the many signs of life in this place around these tables, all of the many evidences of your Spirit at work, and we sense, God, we can feel that you are calling us forward into new possibilities, even as we are faithful to the heritage and the grand old stories that we have to tell in this place. Help us to be people of balance. Help us to be people of faith and people who seek evermore to open ourselves to your Spirit at work. In Christ's name, amen. All right. Go in peace and hope you'll join on Wednesday nights in October. Thank you.